You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And I'm so hyped right now. Anything's possible. Oh, my mama. Oh, my mama made it, man. Anything's possible.
Rainy days, jump shot, fade away. This the best Celtics podcast day to day. I get excited about it every night about it. A real C's fan wouldn't want to live their life without it. Banner 18 in the making, we gotta make it. Best squad in the East and still we can't get complacent. Most winning franchise, so the history's ancient. You could tell them other guys to go and plan a vacation. Yeah, Corrales, Packard, and Jay King. Locked on, trying to get the 18th ring. The most in-depth coverage that you ever gonna hear. Well respected in the city like Russell's career. It's Raining Jay. Millie.
Welcome back to the Locked On Celtics podcast. Thank you for joining us after the Boston Celtics beat the Minnesota Timberwolves 115-102. We're going to talk about it all. Gordon Hayward had another monster night. He just loves facing Minnesota. Al Horford versus Karl Anthony Towns, Marcus Smart had an injury, lots to get to, Terry Rozier, starter Terry. We're going to talk about it all here on the Locked On Celtics podcast. We're the Raining Jays. I am John Corrales of MassLive.com, joined by Samuel Jamison Packard III.
Damn.
Is that your thing?
I was trying it out.
It's all right. We're going to workshop it. We should just let it flow. Also known as Ladies Love Cool Jam.
Damn.
I like it. It makes me laugh.
That's half the battle.
That's it. So Celtics again, 115-102. Up and down game. They seemed like at halftime they were in control. The third quarter was a problem because Karl Anthony Towns is a big problem. The Celtics came back in the fourth. Again, Gordon Hayward, big, huge monster night. I guess the final number is 35. I thought he had 36, but
his final threes became a two.
Became a two
at the end.
So he ends up being 4 of 7 from three, 14 of 18 overall, 3 of 3 from the line. He also had 5 assists. Huge night. So let's just spend a little time here talking about Gordon Hayward. I loved the fact that not only did he dunk 3 times, by the time we got to the third one, which is a transition dunk late in the third quarter, that third one, he looked fluid. He didn't look like – he's had open dunks before where it kind of looked like he was struggling to get to the rim. That one, he just caught it and went up. It looked like he was floating a little bit. And it just seemed like the other dunks kind of led up to him just being more comfortable. I liked – again, we're talking about a post-Minnesota game where we're really loving Gordon Hayward. But unlike the last one – the explosiveness really was shining through in this one.
It was explosiveness mixed with aggressiveness. It felt like he was really looking to get downhill and get his own shot tonight. You talked about that struggle, that third quarter where the Celtics gave up almost another 40 points after a terrible Spurs performance. But Hayward scored 15 of his 35 in that quarter and only won three. The 6 other field goals he had were all 2-point shots, and it really felt like he was trying to just get his own shot, get to the rim. He did a good job of he had a little Steve Nash hesitation move in there, just penetrating. And Stevens mentioned this after the game, but like when 3 dunks go in, so you get some really easy ones, it felt like just his confidence was there. Don't know what it is about the Timberwolves. Doesn't make any sense. Don't even have any good jokes about that, but it just felt like he was really going for his own and trying to attack the rim. I thought the Celtics the entire night did a good job of getting into the paint and playing inside-out basketball. Hayward was in the corner for a number of threes, and that's kind of another way he built up his point total. But the Celtics had, 34 assists on 45 field goals. That's one of the a very good ratio for them. That's one of the Brad Stevens go-to statistics. But the entire night before that kind of third quarter where Hayward was going off, the Celtics just all around were having a pretty decent scoring performances from basically up and down the roster, everyone other than Marcus Smart and Jason Tatum.
So if you want an indication of how the ball was moving, every Celtic that played, except for Brad Wanamaker and PJ Dozier at the end in garbage time, every Celtic had an assist. So that shows you that the ball was moving. The team high was Marcus Smart with 8. A couple guys had 5, Rozier and Hayward. Jason Tatum had 4. He had an off night, but he still had 4 assists. Al Horford had 4 assists. I felt like at the beginning of the game, they were really focusing on running the offense through Al Horford up at the top. And Al Horford fed Hayward for a couple of his baskets, a couple of his dunks. Hayward's passing, I mean, Horford's passing was offered. But awesome. But back to Gordon Hayward, not only was his explosiveness able to be measured in the dunks that he got, but there were times where he was getting past the defenders. And I asked him about that after the game in the locker room. If you can't, we're still in the garden, by the way, if you can't hear the Bull Gang knocking this
Bull
thing
gang.
Down.
Gang, gang.
Putting this, taking the floor apart so they can get Bruins hockey in there for tomorrow. But after the game, Hayward talked about his explosiveness. He feels like his lateral movement is really getting there. It feels like it's back to kind of where it was. His vertical movement, his vertical is still a work in progress. He said his ankle's sore, and it's just part of the recovery, and he's still doing things for his ankle. But being able to turn the corner consistently is kind of a sort of update on what we have been talking about in the past with Hayward, where we talked about how he always needed a screen, that no matter who he had on him, he got a mismatch and was always calling for a screen. Sometimes he still does. And I think him saying that the ankle is sore tonight is telling, because it's a reminder that it's just not going to be back yet. Sometimes he's going to have games where he doesn't feel it like he felt it tonight, and he is going to need a pick. But tonight he didn't. He got a pick and roll. He was in a pick and roll from Al Horford, but then he was able to turn the corner on a guy. He faced guys up and was able to take him off the dribble. Just a good overall performance and a very encouraging sign that even though it's not going to happen every night yet, he is progressing. He is moving forward, and it is very encouraging to see that in Gordon Hayward.
Even though the explosiveness isn't fully back, he's still pretty damn crafty around the rim. Even in times where he can't fully get there, he's really developed a nice like kind of pull-up hesitation game around the rim where he's able to kind of jump and hang in midair a little bit longer. I thought he had a damn good game tonight. Marcus Smart only had 2 points, but his 8 assists were allowed 8 assists. He had one where he basically just he graded a steal, one dribble, one-handed pass all the way to Semi for who was underneath the hoop at that time. Had another crazy one-handed pass to Al Horford to knock down a shot, but he just had the vision. He was doing some amazing things on offense, and I mean with Kyrie Irving out, we got some playoff starter Terry at least in the first quarter, but Marcus Smart was really the guy who kind of ran the offenses, was the major facilitator tonight.
Terry Rozier's first quarter was awesome. 11 points, was it 5 of 5 shooting, hit a 3, a few assists. I mean, he whipped off the Rondo move. That was nice. A game like this, when you don't have Kyrie, when you have Horford limited, he's still on a minutes restriction. It does take a lot. And when you lose a guy like Kyrie, sometimes that forces guys to step up. And for some reason, Terry Rozier loves being a starter. That 11 points was, he only had 5 the rest of the way, but it was a huge, huge start to the game. The Celtics needed somebody to come out huge like that. Then Marcus Smart kind of takes over with his passing. Then Gordon Hayward comes in. It's just a cascading positive thing. We saw against the Spurs the cascading negative. There was some negative. We'll get to that later. But just this team effort, and like we said earlier, the paint touches were, I think, the huge thing, especially early on. And we were watching it as it happened. When the Celtics against the Spurs were struggling to score, the ball was moving around, and they talk about getting it from side to side, but at some point getting from side to side has to include some sort of drive and collapsing the defense, which is what the Spurs did so, so well and why they scored so many points against the Celtics in that third quarter. The Celtics started to do that, get into the paint, collapse the defense, kick it out, get the team in rotation. It's a simple thing. We talk about it all the time. They're finally able to do that. And by doing that and working the ball around, everybody got good looks, and most guys benefited from that.
Yeah, Celtics were 26 of 33 from the paint tonight. They're normally not a big paint-scoring team, but finished with the 52 points. And I really think that opened up a lot of open looks from three. They finished 40% from three. Mook Morris missed 5 threes, which is shocking because that's just not something he does. But you just expect them to hit more, but 40% is a good clip. And really, the ball movement was there, even on some of the ones they missed. It was just a solid offensive performance. My question about Terry, and I asked this during the first quarter, is the fact that he's so good now as a starter kind of a detriment? Like, come on, Tito. Let's just do this as a bench player. Like, we know you're good. Just act like the game starts with 8 minutes left in the first, or 4 minutes left in the first quarter.
Right, like we got to hypnotize him like he's a starter, just like we have to hypnotize Gordon Hayward to think he's playing the Timberwolves.
Minnesota, yeah.
I'm going to answer that question.
We need to pump Tibbs yelling into the game. Maybe it's Tibbs.
Yeah, maybe it's the Tibbs thing. Yeah, yeah, sure.
3 seconds.
Why don't we get more into Terry Rozier after we take a short break?
Here, here.
Sounds good. We'll be right back on the Locked On Celtics podcast. If I was Terry Rozier's agent, I would be happy about a performance like this because it's at least evidence that he can be that playoff Terry Rozier that he was in the past. And for whatever reason, going back to the question you asked before the break, I don't know what it is about coming in off the bench. Other than some guys like the routine. First of all, some guys like to know that they're going to get the minutes. And if you know you're going to get the 30-some-odd minutes, it's different than knowing you're going to get 20-some-odd minutes. There's a bit more urgency. You feel a little bit of pressure. You feel like, if I don't start scoring now, I might not score. So you start to force things a little bit. Now,
which is even wild, though, because when he came out shooting like in the first quarter with that urgency, it's just... It's been that this way to Terry Rozier's entire career.
Right, but it's not that he came out with the urgency to try to score. And when I say urgency, and when you're shooting the basketball and you're any bit not relaxed, if you're in any way not comfortable, then that can affect your shot. And it's hard to be as precise as you need to be consistently if you're not relaxed, if you're not comfortable. Because shooting a basketball is precise. And people, I don't think, can really appreciate, unless you go through the mechanics of it all, to shoot a ball, especially as a guard who's shooting from three, that is a long way away. Well, I'm sitting here on the ninth floor of the Garden looking down at that three-point line. That is a long way away. And to shoot that shot and to get it up that into that basket from that distance, it takes precision. The arm angle has to be the same. The release has to come off your hand a certain way. And if you're stressed, if you're not comfortable, then that can impact your shot. I'm not saying that's what's happening with Terry, but I feel like if he's more comfortable in the starting role and he knows he's going to get those minutes, then he can come out and play a little freer. And when you're playing free, you're playing comfortable, you're just shooting the ball, it just feels better. And I have no better explanation than that, because that's just basketball. Anybody who's played can attest to this. If you just feel comfortable on the court, it just changes how you play the game. If you're not comfortable in a certain role, then you're just gonna have issues. And I think it's as simple as that with Terry Rozier.
I agree, and I'm going to move on because I just got a text from my brother saying that I led off the weird Celtics Twitter segment on NBC Sports Boston with my tweet about Al Horford being a middle-aged single lady because he owns Cat.
That was a quality tweet.
Now, I didn't think it was my best tweet of the night, but maybe I like a little more obscure brand of humor, but it's true. Karl-Anthony Towns had 4 points in the first half and was not good. There was a six-minute stretch there in the second quarter where the Wolves just did not score. And then Karl-Anthony Towns scored 20 points in the third quarter and really kind of clawed the Wolves back into the game. That's a good Cat reference, clawed.
Yeah, I like that.
But basically, anytime Al Horford was in the game against Anthony Towns, he really struggled. The Celtics had an absurd amount of blocks tonight. Eight. That's more than they're used to. But two from Al Horford. I just thought he was just dominant in the post against Towns. Towns really couldn't do anything. He scored 10 points while Horford is in the game in the third quarter, but like if you go back and look at those plays, they were it was like oftentimes Horford was helping off the driver and Towns was open or is a putback like that. Towns going one-on-one against Horford was just there was nothing the Wolves could really do. That's when their offense really slowed down. Horford comes back in the game in the fourth quarter, and then for the next 6 minutes, though, the Wolves only score 6 points.
Right.
Horford, he's just fantastic. He's one of the – with Baines out, you just don't expect him to like be that big physical force, but he does a great job against guys like Towns, like Embiid. He did so well that I was forced to ask Brad Stevens a question about it best after the game.
You actually – ask the question in the press conference. You never ask questions.
I rarely do, but there was a great performance from Al Horford, and it was like everyone was looking around. No one was going to ask about it, so I felt like I just wanted to give Al some
just
love.
Step up, man. That's great. I highly encourage that because a lot of times those press conferences, they get kind of like slow. People don't want to ask questions. I think people don't want to ask questions because they're afraid of tipping their hand, and they don't want to like there are a ton of questions to ask, but if you start asking certain questions and everybody kind of knows what you're working on and people are like, I'm just going to ask a generic, so what does it mean to the team's performance when Al Horford's playing really well? But you ask a question, Al Horford playing against Karl Anthony Towns, he was very, very good.
And Stevens tried to act like Tice and Yabu were very, very good against Karl Anthony Towns.
They were
which
not.
Which is he has to say, but there's a reason why the Timberwolves scored 39 points in the third quarter. And it's Karl Anthony Towns, I think, what are these crazy stats? 20 points, 4 rebounds, 8 of 9 from the field. The Wolves were 16 of 23 in that quarter. They were basically just unstoppable. The Celtics still shot 52%, like their offense was still there. That was when Hayward was going off. It's just, it's hard to stop a 6-for-23 performance. This almost became a close game, but
it did become a close game, and they needed everybody. Good thing Marcus Smart could come back from his what looked like a scary injury, because they needed everybody to come in and perform very well and push it to back up to about 20 before the late slide in garbage time, but. Celtics had trouble. The non-Horford Celtics had trouble with Karl Anthony Towns. The one thing I'll say about Horford, I think I've said it here before, it's his strength is underrated. He is a strong guy. He's a big guy. He's not thick jack frame like Semi Ojeleye and Marcus Smart, but he's a strong guy, and he can hold his own. He knows how to defend the post.
And it seems like he's damn smart. Like, he knows.
He is very
he
smart.
He read the scouting report. He knew exactly. This is why he owns Cat. Like, he knew what Cat was going to do before each time. It's like, the strips, the blocks, his timing was impeccable. And to be fair to the Timberwolves, or I guess generally, they were without three major players tonight. Robert Covington, Jeff Teague, that other guy they have. I don't know. I can't remember the third player. I just saw someone tweet about how they were at three players, but.
Derrick Rose.
Oh, yeah, Derrick Rose. So, like, when Karl Anthony Towns scores 4 points in the first half, they're really going to struggle. And I have to give Andrew Wiggins credit tonight. He was good.
He was good.
10 of 18, was knocking down a lot of shots, got to the line 12 times. He was the whole reason they were basically in this game. He played 43 minutes. I'm one of the biggest anti-Wiggins people there is just because he doesn't normally try. I will knock him a little bit. He has an innate ability to step, just get his feet right inside that three-point line for his long two attempts.
Oh, but yeah.
This was the best Andrew Wiggins game I've ever seen, but pretty much no one else on the roster save, I guess, Tyus Jones had 14 points, but I don't remember him. Anthony Tolliver hit at least a couple three-point shots, but though is a really depleted Timberwolves roster who,
yep.
I mean, it showed in the first half.
Not having Covington was a big deal. I'm sure if Covington was here, he would have had a few minutes on Gordon Hayward to try and slow him down. But and Tibbs loves Covington, so there. Look, both teams were missing key guys. They didn't have Covington. They didn't have Rose, two of their top scorers in that first game against the Celtics. Teague is a guy that can help, but Celtics didn't have Kyrie Irving. Celtics didn't have Aaron Baines, and even Brad Stevens said afterwards. Having 20 minutes of Al Horford and 20 minutes of Aaron Baines against Karl Anthony Towns makes a big difference as opposed to having these other guys. which I think is when he was like, but those other guys played hard. But, like, let's be real here. So, but again, Al Horford, very good at defense. Let's, before we take a break, address a couple of injuries before we come back with the tweets. Marcus Smart left the game. I swore that he either dislocated his shoulder or separated his shoulder the way he hit Karl Anthony Towns. His right shoulder hit on a screen. But the good news is that he's fine. He actually got hit on the back of the shoulder. It hit a nerve, and it caused a lot of pain. It caused whatever. But it looked a lot worse than it was. So Marcus Smart is fine. He came back in the game. He did a lot.
He immediately came back in the game, shot a three. Ill-advised three. Really didn't, wasn't close. But then made up for it, immediately got a steal and an alley-oop. Celtics went alley-oop crazy tonight. There must have been like 8 to 10 alley-oops.
I know. There were a ton of alley-oops. Successful alley-oops. I was too busy with actual work to actually tweet out successful alley-oop alerts because there were a lot. And my favorite one was Shimmy Ogilvy to Marcus Smart. That feels like you pulled names out of a hat to say who was going to successful alley-oop. Might be the least likely combination on this team to throw successful alley-oops. I mean, who's less likely?
I don't know.
Except for the guys
who
don't play.
Aaron Baines throwing an alley-oop?
So, but Marcus Morris fine. Marcus Morris seemed okay. He's got a stiff neck. Brad Stevens was like, he looks hurt in the post-game press conference. But Marcus Morris addressed the media and said, feels like I got a crick in my neck, but I'm cool. So it doesn't seem like it's going to be too bad. But we know how the Celtics go. We'll see. Well, he's going to be evaluated. He's questionable. And then before the game Friday, he's out. So we'll see. But Marcus Morris, not a serious injury. He's fine. Everybody was laughing at the fact that he and his brother both have neck injuries.
Weird.
Which is weird. But that's your injury update. When we return, your tweets, Rain and Jays, Rain and Junk, Junk Drawer.
Plus a dramatic reading of a Philadelphia 76ers writer mad online.
Oh, I can't wait for that.
Let the bass kick. Let the bass kick. Let the bass kick.
Every day we encourage you to tweet at us with the Rain and Jays or Rain and Junk hashtag. You do it during the games and after the games. We read a few of them to react and get you some shine. Say thank you for listening and participating. So, at Beard Jam, the only thing that can warp space-time like Time Lord is Yab Butts. He is to Rain and Junk what most players is to Rain and Jay. What most players want to be Rain and Jays. I don't know what the hell that was. That was a bad start for me.
Oh, Yabu's got a big butt.
Yeah.
That's a good joke.
Sorry, James Beard. I screwed that up royally. But shout out to you.
Best to move on. The shot already happened. You got to keep playing. Take more shots.
That's it. Andrew Moore, 1987. That last sequence for Terry's layup had it all. Yabu thickness on D. Hustle. Ball movement inside out. And a sweet layup. This is nice.
There was some glimpses of Erotic City ball movement tonight.
There was. In fact, in the first quarter, we had like the ultimate almost erotic. Like
Mook missed the three, right?
Mook missed the three. There were a couple of plays, I forget exactly. But I remember like Al Horford missed the dunk.
Yeah.
Which was weird. I don't even know. I still don't know what happened on play. There was a whistle after it.
Maybe it went over the backboard, but I didn't think that was a thing, especially after that weird play in Dallas where it went over the backboard.
I have no idea. But they had a few plays in the first quarter where I was like, oh, this is, never mind. So, a tease. I don't know what we would call that. Blue Ball City?
Sure. Four Play City?
I don't know.
Mildly Erotic Village?
But it got you all worked up, but there was no finish.
I mean, the finish was 35 points from Gordon Hayward.
Well, yeah, but, I mean, I'm talking about those places specifically. I feel like this is a very Rain and Junk feeling Rain and Jay segment. Let's see if we can rein it in a little bit. Michaela at Title City Boston. Why can't Terry play at a high level like he did tonight when he comes off the bench? We discussed that earlier.
Who knows?
But That's probably not going to be a problem for him next year with whatever team he goes to, theoretically. So, shout out to Michaela. Back to Beer Jam. I'm going to redeem myself. The way Rozier skies for rebounds, I feel like he should get more chase down blocks.
I think he's good at one type of jumping only, and that's meeting the ball at its highest point on a rebound.
Yeah.
That's not the chase down blocks, never his game. It's the jumping as high as he can straight up in the air.
He's a tremendous rebounder.
Side to side jumping is a little bit different, but just meeting at the highest point, he's like the perfect gift, Daryl Strawberry catching a fly ball in homer at the back.
Just going to say, the best part about Terry Rozier grabbing those rebounds is the inevitable Strawberry gift that you tweet out from that. It's awesome. It's a great, just such a great episode. Anyway, Jovian Shadow, Australian. Shout out to Aussies. Aggressive Hayward is good Hayward. Yes, yes. We love aggressive Hayward. I just can't wait for that dude to just be aggressive all the time. And I talked about it. I wrote about it. I think it's super, super important for everybody. I'm going to keep saying it. To remember that he had that surgery late in May to remove the plate and the screws. And he said in October that he was only just getting to do the things that he wanted to do over the summer. So the stuff he wanted to do in June, July, August, September, he was just starting to do in October. So October, November, December were essentially his summers, and he was doing that while playing NBA games. So now we're into January, and that would be where he was actually hoping to start the season. So I think he's going to start turning it around in the next month or two. So I'm sticking to that. I know I've said a lot of things positive about Gordon Hayward's progression, but I'm really trying to take in and not be as overly positive, trying to take in the information that we have. I think he's going to get better than what he is. I don't know where he's going to get, but he's going to be better than he is now, and I think games like this are the proof. Anything to add?
No.
Okay. At BCB underscore official, Boston Celtics, Brazil. Hey, huge fan here of the Rain and Jays from Brazil, man. Keep up the good work and tell Jay that he really sounds like a huge ball hog.
Now, see, when I saw this tweet, I thought he said Balrog, like the character from Street Fighter, who's like Mike Tyson.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, he does. He is a huge Balrog. But yeah, anyway, he's a big ball hog, too. But thanks for checking in from Brazil. We have definitely appreciate our international listeners.
Big fan of the international listeners. Let's see. Just a few comments here at the AB Green. Only 5 games into the season, and Hayward dropped 36. He recovered faster than any of us could have imagined.
This is a good season starts on Christmas throwback. Thank
very,
you, AB Green.
Very good. It's excellent way to go. At that masshole. Seems like a lot of Gordon's struggles recently have come from trying to find his role and less to do with physical limitations. When he knows he has to be the guy, he is the guy.
He did kind of like perk up a little bit after Smarf went out, and I thought like maybe he's too scared to mess up when Smart's on the court because he's intimidated by by like what Marcus might yell at him. But I don't know. Like it, you could have the theory. It could just be like when he knows he needs to do something, he's like more willing to be aggressive. But I don't know. It's really weird. The weird stat from this game is that he's had two over 20 point performances, and they've both been against the Timberwolves and over 30 points.
Right. He has no 20 point games
other
he
than
has a
those
bunch
two
of 19 and 17. And 30 plus, but no 20 point games. I'm gonna predict boldly that in this crazy January schedule where they play every other day, he'll have like 2 or 3 20 point games. I'll just say. And then at Cheesehead Shamrock.
Verbal meme.
Gordon Hayward when he sees Wiggins guarding him, and that's what?
Kirby? Eating a bunch of food.
Yeah.
You know, sucking things in his mouth like Kirby does.
That's it.
That's a good verbal meme. All right, let's move to the grain and junk. Apparently, Mark Jones said, Gordon Hayward is working the Timberwolves like a part-time job. He's given them that work. And J.P. Roy asked, what does this exactly mean? What is this analogy all about? I don't get why it's a part-time job. It seemed like he was working in like a full-time job, maybe an overtime job. So I don't know. Good question.
I would say it's probably more likely to say he's worked like a salaried position where you're just putting in a ton of work
Exactly. From
that was horrible.
Miss Sportsfy, someone needs to tell Scal to stop with the is stuff. It's so dumb. I'm not going to criticize Scal or anyone for trying to make a nickname happen, but there's a reason it has not cut on yet. Smarf is the Spartan ninja that's from Chasing Ariel. And oh, from E.H. Decker, I am so Smarf, S-M-R-F.
Yes! I mean, S-M-A-R-F.
That's a good one. I'm going to just, I got a full junk drawer tonight, so I'm going to go right into it. Tibbs took a timeout with a 4 seconds into the game. You asked me what a mad Tibbs timeout was, because he's always mad. I don't know, but I'm just entertained when another coach does it. You mentioned earlier, but Terry Rozier did the rondo. That was right after Mook did a damn good fancy pass to Hayward underneath, but thought that deserved some recognition. There was a backcourt violation in the middle of the game where Mook ran back to get it and just took it and threw the ball as far as he could the opposite end of the floor right after, like, moments after he got a delay game call. He could have got a tech, but he did not. Fun segment where Kyrie versus Terry trying to name a bunch of TV families. And Kyrie called Full House Family House, which I thought was going to be the funniest moment. And then Terry just completely failed and didn't know anyone on television. And he ended his segment by calling the Sopranos Making the Band, which I thought was all that's fantastic stuff. My brother texted me in the game, that's the most athletic move I've ever seen Yabu do. I don't remember what he did.
I don't know.
But apparently he scored some points. And so shouts to Yabu. He had 4 points. He had another post up in the second half. So 2 points per half for Yabu. To be honest, forgot Anthony Tolliver existed until he made a three. Had no concept of the man. And then he's just, boom, making threes. Gorgui Dieng. At one point in my Celtics fandom, I was convinced Gorgui Dieng was the solution to everything. Man, the Celtics needed Gorgui Dieng. He was going to solve all life's problems, and I was so wrong. But it's just fun to remind yourself of takes of yesteryear. Hip Hop Hooray, great song. I'm pretty sure there's clips of the Time Lord and Smarf freestyling to it on the sideline, so check that out. I retweeted it. Awesome. Jared Bayless was trying to take the ball over the half court and call a timeout, and Smart just pressured him. Bayless tried to do a spin move, just threw it away. That's what led to the semi to Smarf alley-oop. I just thought that was cool. Like, how can you mess up trying to take a timeout? But Marcus Smart found a way. Heroes Among Us tonight was a kid who gave someone the Heimlich maneuver, but they mentioned that he learned the Heimlich maneuver a week before the incident happened. Does the teacher get no credit for that timing? I mean, that, and he properly taught the kid how to do the Heimlich maneuver. I'm just thinking that teacher is like Hero 1A, and we didn't see it. We didn't even get his name.
Wow. Well, I mean, if Hero gets the award, Hero 1A is...
It's Heroes Among Us. Heroes. I don't know. I the kid was a little smug. I mean, give some credit to the teacher. refs hate Daniel Tice.
You just called out a kid who saved another kid's life.
Well, yeah, his head's a little big after saving someone's life.
Sure. What have you
Julian
done for
Edelman
me
was here looking like a lumberjack, and there's a clip of Mook just, like, rubbing his beard, which is fun. It's just good old-fashioned stuff. That's the content I crave. And now, for a dramatic reading.
All right.
This is from Ben Dietrich. He's a writer for, I think he's a freelance writer, but he wrote the story on The Ringer that was all about the burner accounts and Brian Colangelo. But apparently, in watching a game in which the 76ers won, they beat the Clippers, apparently everyone was very upset with Ben Simmons. All of 76ers Twitter was upset. And this did not go over well with one Ben Dietrich. So it's a series of four tweets, but I'm going to read them now. Oh, before, I just saw another note. One point in high school, Semi Ojeleye averaged 38 points a game. Set the Kansas record for points a game. Wild stuff. All right. First tweet. You guys bullied a basketball genius into taking the worst shots in basketball. Nice job. Can't believe Ben Simmons got gaslit into taking a Loserville 17-footer by a bunch of non-dunking nerds. I'm embarrassed for him. Love when my generationally gifted power forward, parentheses, like Magic Johnson, gets pranked into fingering up mid-range slop by a gamer a gamer clan who can't touch net. Ben Simmons, quote, I'm a sculpted Adonis who sends defenders careening to the bleachers and dunks like a hammer on the forge of Hephaestus? I don't know. I can't read. I probably should have read this beforehand. Me, I have a pod and a hankering for mid-range. He's basically coming for the throat of Jack Michael right now. But he's missing the whole point. Shoot a three, coward.
Yeah.
A three. We don't know. We don't like the mid-range. We've been yelling about the mid-range the whole time. And I know for a fact Jack Michael can dunk. I've seen him do it on Instagram. It's just like such a weird, like he was so bad online. He was taking shots at Kevin McHale today just because Celtics fans were laughing at him. He called him like a Troy Murphy without a jump shot. Like it's just absurd. And this guy is supposed to be like, he's the journalist who took down Colangelo. And now he's just like very upset because people are like mean at Ben Simmons. It's absolutely absurd.
I have serious questions about how serious he was. I hope for his sake, for anybody's sake, that you're not that serious about that topic, that Ben Simmons shooting jumpers.
I can't tell if he's upset because, like, Ben Simmons took bad mid-range jumpers or because people were upset with him enough to get him to take it. It was all sorts of crazy.
If he's serious, then my reaction is that he does not have a very high opinion of Ben Simmons.
No, he called him an Adonis.
But you can't have a high opinion of somebody if you think a bunch of Celtics Twitter folk.
Gamer clan.
These people that he is denigrating, our people, by the way.
Non-dunking nerds. That's us.
If he thinks that those folks are enough to, quote-unquote, bully him, Ben Simmons, into taking those shots, then he must not think much of Ben Simmons.
He said he was embarrassed for him, so yeah.
I would say that's an insult to Ben Simmons, that Ben Simmons is so concerned with what people on Twitter are saying that he's going to start taking bad mid-range jumpers. That's horrible. If you think that that's what Ben Simmons is, if you think that's who he is, then that means he is not a very good player because he's so easily swayed by people on the internet. That's a horrible person to have on your team. That's a horrible player. And if that's what he thinks, then he thinks Ben Simmons is mentally weak and not able to handle the pressure of being an NBA player.
It also is completely nonsensical because, again, shoot a three, you coward.
Well,
if Ben Simmons was actually there, he'd be shooting threes. I've seen many a clip of Ben Simmons shooting threes in warm-ups.
Sure.
One time he made 2 of 5.
I've seen him hit shots. I've also seen him miss a lot. I have to just say, the people of Philadelphia fans cannot grasp what shoot a three, you coward, really means.
They've never gotten it.
They just can't.
Their heads
get the
joke. Filled with water ice and soft pretzels that go down Wawa eat a hoagie.
That's a joke for somebody that has lived in Philadelphia before.
Yeah, Wawa is a gas station place that makes hoagies that you can order on a screen.
Sure.
It's delicious. And it was me doing a horrible Philly accent impression talking about water ice. Go hoagie, go down South Broad Street. Cheer on the birds. Go birds.
It's almost as bad as D from It's Always Sunny. We're trying to do her Philly accent. Almost, though. I just can't. I don't understand why they can't get the joke. The joke is pretty simple.
They're a generally humorless bunch.
Yeah.
Except when the Eagles win, then they're just
greasing
poles to.
I don't know. They can't get the joke. And if this dude was serious about this, then, man, he has got problems. Because that was a tirade unlike I've seen any before. I hope he was kidding. I hope he was kidding. But
my Philly accent's better than my Australian accent.
Oh, but yeah. That's your Australian accent is borderline offensive to people in Australia.
It is.
I think that if we go down to Australia, we're going to get a good booting.
Do you know what they call shrimps prawns? So the phrase shrimp on the Barbie is not even something they would say. It would be prawns on the Barbie. I learned this because I think I was drunk on Christmas, and I said I have lots of fans all over Australia who would throw me multiple shrimps on multiple Barbies, which makes no sense, but I tweeted it. And then all the Australian listeners came out and said, no, they're called prawns.
I guess prawns on the Barbie.
Outrageous fun.
That's a good YouTube video. People go out there, look up outrageous fun.
All right, we're going to wrap it up here at the Boston Garden. The Boston Celtics beat the Minnesota Timberwolves 115-102. We'll be back tomorrow to what's tomorrow's Thursday. Yeah, we're going to wrap up the week. This is the Thursday podcast, right? Man, I lose track of the days now. So, whatever. Hope you've enjoyed the show. Hope you've enjoyed enough to subscribe. If you're a new listener, we thank all the new listeners. Thank you very, very much for joining the podcast. Really happy to have you on board. I've been hearing a lot from people who have been recent listeners, maybe joined over the past year or something like that. Really, really enjoy the fact that you guys have come aboard, that are following us and interacting with us online. Thank you so much. Regular listeners, give us that 5-star rating. Give us a good written review wherever you can. It really helps us out. So we'll see you next time here on the Locked On Celtics podcast. We're part of the Locked On Podcast Network.